Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It is March 20th, Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, and we're talking about college football. You're filling in your bracket. You're putting down your Final Four. You got your Cinderella story all mapped out, and you got Caden Proctor deciding that he's transferring back to Alabama. That is college football and where we are right now in this wonderful sport that we talk about right here on this show, The Hard Count, every single day. We're glad to have you all a part of it. Maybe make sure you are subscribed. As I just mentioned, Caden Proctor shaking the internet, shaking the college football world by transferring back to where he played football last season. We got spring intel for you as well. We're talking about the latest out there in Athens, Georgia, what's going on at Texas. They just started spring practice yesterday. Talked to some folks over there and got the report on what's going on in Austin. On top of all that, before we got on the air, man, Nebraska, they tapped in their new AD. It's going to be Troy Dannon from Washington. He was at Washington for all of like a cup of coffee and a bag of biscuits, and now he's headed to Nebraska. Before that, though, he was at Tulane. Back in our studio setup, we got Pete Nakos joining the show here in a matter of minutes talking about Clemson and them just taking an absolute RKO to the ACC. Is that the end of the ACC? Because if you're keeping track now, Florida State and Clemson are both suing the conference. We got Pete Nakos joining the show to break it all down, and I cannot wait for that conversation. Also, at the end of this thing, we're talking most rabid. Not the most powerful, not the largest, the most rabid fan bases in this wonderful sport that we call college football. Again, we're glad to have you all a part of this. Before we get rolling again, make sure you're subscribed. This is a year-round sport. There used to be a time in this game where you could kind of tune in from August to December and January and then maybe tune out for a while, come back during spring practice. The portal's year-round. Caden Proctor announcing he's going back to Bama yesterday, more or less announcing the news breaking he's going back to Bama as of yesterday from Iowa. He doesn't care about the calendar. The transfer portal doesn't care about the calendar. College football is officially a year-round sport. This show addresses it accordingly. So we appreciate y'all being dialed in. We're glad to have you subscribed. Can't waste too much more time. Let's get right to it, man. Starting with some spring intel for you. We got spring ball being played in Athens, Georgia. Dogs HQ, man, I'm going to say it. The best spot for you to stay tuned in to all things Georgia football, all things Georgia spring practice, tons of observation and notes, all the way to the nth degree over there with Rusty Mansell and company, just crushing all the coverage. So get a membership over there. The leading story out of Athens so far during spring practice, because remember, it's only been a couple of practices, the leading story is they love what they've got in the transfer portal. Like, Georgia's one of those places that use the portal more as a, you know, as a scalpel. They don't use it so much as a chainsaw. Like, they'll go in and kind of just address some small needs they have, maybe tinker with the roster just a little bit. But it's not a thing where you see Georgia take like 20 guys through the portal and overhaul the roster. Had a couple of needs at the wide receiver position, and they feel like they hit a home run with Colby Young, who transferred from Miami over to Athens during that first portal window, obviously by him being able to go through spring practice right now. The thing with him is he's just,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just a different kind of player than they've had at the wide receiver position in a minute there, just from his size alone. Like, he's listed at 6'3", 215. Feel like he plays even bigger than that when you watch him at Miami. Had it north of 40 catches for them last year, almost 50, 47 receptions, 5 touchdowns. He's gonna be a dude for them. I truly believe that. You add that to Carson Beck's second season with Mike Bobo. And on top of what they have in addition to the transfer portal haul with Colby Young, they got Trevor Etienne from Florida, who's a stud back for them. They got London Humphreys from Vanderbilt, who's right down the road from where we're recording this show. Georgia feels like they hit in the transfer portal with Colby Young, as well as the rest of these guys that are practicing right now. And I'm going to go back to what I was just saying a second ago. If you give Carson Beck more tools to be successful his second year in the system with Mike Bobo, I think you're going to see his numbers continue to improve. I think we'll see him push the ball downfield even more this season by nature of him being more comfortable and by nature of him having guys like Colby Young to go up and get it for him. You're replacing Brock Bowers. You're replacing Ladd McConkey. It's not an easy task to do, but Colby Young, they feel confident about where he stands right now. So for Georgia, man, again, the way they use the portal, it's not going to be this massive overhaul of getting a bunch more talent. The reason why Georgia doesn't have to go to the portal as heavily as some other teams, because the guy that was on scout team for them a season ago was probably a 4 or 5-star cat and is now running with the ones or the twos. So you don't have to go and acquire in the portal what you can kind of just develop in your backyard. So Georgia, they love where they stand right now in spring practice, and we'll obviously have more notes for you as we get more intel out of Athens. Let's go out to the 40 Acres in Austin, Texas. Inside Texas, the best source for all things Texas all year long. That's the On3 fan site. Go and get dialed in over there. Tremendous intel from Joe Cook and the gang. The practice that they had yesterday, or the only practice they've had so far, there's not a ton of massive notes, but I think the one thing you're going to always hear, as long as there's a quarterback on that roster with the last name Manning, is watching that pecking order and seeing if there's any shift during practice. What I was told is that it's Quinn Ewers, and then it's Arch Manning. And that was the order they went in every single rep, through team, through throwing routes on air. Like, that was how they operated with the quarterback rotation, more or less. Not really rotation. It's sort of a pecking order with Quinn Ewers being the guy there in Austin. Now, we love Arch Manning. We think he's going to be really good for a long time. But I wholeheartedly believe that he will have to wait his turn behind Quinn Ewers. I think Quinn Ewers is set to have a really great season after another year in Steve Sarkisian's system. And they also said that Quinn Ewers was the one who is continuing to step into that leadership role. And he stepped into that last year. I think we all saw that. But for Quinn Ewers, and the way that he's now really kind of an older guy of sorts in Austin, broke down the team doing their, you know, their jumping jacks during calisthenics. He was the one who counted them off and broke down the team. Like, he's the leader from a position standpoint, being the starting quarterback, but he's a leader also vocally right now in Austin. So it's not massive news, but if there was anything different there, if I had reported or told you, hey, Arch Manning's kind of taking reps with the ones, as well as the, you know, like, if there was a story like that, we'd talk about it, but that's not the case. It's Quinn Ewers' team as of right now in spring practice. Trey Wisner is running with the threes at the running back position. The reason why I mentioned Trey Wisner is because you got a pretty solid stable of backs between Jaden Blue and C.J. Baxter. But Trey Wisner is a guy who I think is going to see the field. Now, this isn't saying he's got this carved-out role already, but he's one of those guys, man, that he can catch the ball for you out of the backfield. I got to cover him in high school over at Waco Connolly before he transferred over to DeSoto. Dude can go, all right? He's a special player with the ball in his hands. Team loves him. Staff loves him. Keep an eye on Trey Wisner and how he trends during the spring. I'm excited to watch his progress. And then the wide receiver room, interesting note here, Isaiah Bond, transferred over from Bama. Matthew Golden, transferred over from Houston. And then Jonte Cook, who is obviously a freshman last year, saw some action, but I think will have a larger role this upcoming year. They're lining those guys up all over the field at this point in time. Last year, you kind of had an expectation of, okay, you'll probably see Xavier Worthy playing this position. You'll see Adonai Mitchell out wide. Like, these are guys that they feel, at this point in time at least, pretty confident lining up all over the field. And the reason why that's significant, when you can move Isaiah Bond out wide or have him in the slot or have Matthew Golden in the slot or have him wherever you want, the reason why that's significant, when you can move pieces around on your offense, you then get to pick your matchup against the defense. Because if I got Isaiah Bond out wide, it's him versus a corner. Pretty straightforward. Now, corners, obviously, their job is to cover. That's what they're best at. But we put Isaiah Bond in the slot, well, then you either have to put a corner in the slot, you have to put a nickel on him, you got to put a safety down there. If you're really having a bad day, maybe somehow you put a linebacker on him, and that's probably a loss either way you slice it. But being able to pick your matchup gives more opportunity for your players to win that matchup if you're getting the matchup that you like, and gives Quinn Ewers more opportunity to slice and dice and Steve Sarkisian to just be the offensive mastermind that he is. Defensively, I try and tread lightly when it comes to the early intel on the defensive side of the ball, just across spring practice in those first couple of practices, because you're not really hitting. You're definitely not hitting the first practice, so you're kind of just using the eye test. The early notes out of spring ball in Austin is that Jahdae Barron is being moved around that defense. Last year, I believe he played primarily in just one spot for them. They're going to move him around and allow him to showcase his skill set. So Jahdae Barron, we'll see where he ends up when they start hitting people, but so far so good with one practice under the belt on the 40 acres. One more note I want to give you on Texas. Steve Sarkisian and the way that he operates is very much so, the last couple of years at least, is trying to push the standard up here and set this standard, set the culture, set the temperature. And the folks that I talked to yesterday about that, I asked them, like, hey, what's the feel right now in spring practice as it relates to Steve Sarkisian? And they said, yeah, he's still intense. He still obviously has a way of doing things, but it felt like it was a more understanding across the board within that team of what's expected. Like, he's not having to continue to push the bar up. He's trying to keep the bar where it is from a culture's perspective and a temperature perspective and a standard perspective, but he's not trying to raise it anymore to where, you know, they expect it to be. Because I think before it was, hey, this is how we need to do things to win ball games. And now it's more so a thing of, okay, this is what it's going to take to win ball games, but you already know that. So I think the understanding across the board might make for a, I don't know if more composed is the right word, but maybe just a more confident outfit across the board out there on the 40 acres. So spring ball is here. We're just living off of the intel from both these message boards. Again, Dogs HQ for all the Georgia intel, Inside Texas for all the Texas intel. Get a membership there. I promise you, it's well worth every single penny you're going to spend getting all the information over at those phenomenal sites under the On3 umbrella. All right. Keep a good thing going here. So it sounds like, not sounds like, I just looked over to our man Trey Yannity's on the ones and twos in the producer share, and he gave us a thumbs up. We have the privilege of working with some phenomenal people here at On3, and there is nobody better in the industry at what they do than the man, the myth, the legend, Pete Nakos. And Pete, we're glad to have you here, man. We're excited to have you back on the hard count. First and foremost, how are you doing? I mean, you got a lot going on with the portal. You got your cover realignment. Like, how are you overall? Are we sleeping at all? I feel like I ask you that a lot.
You're too nice. You're too nice. I'm just here to bring the juice. I'm great. Let's get at it.
There we go, baby. I love it. I love it, man. You're an absolute animal. News broke yesterday, man, with Clemson suing the ACC, and immediately I jump on the On3 YouTube channel, see you and Andy Staples chopping it up. For me, like, this is something that, to me, it was surprising. Was it surprising to you this happened when it did?
No, I don't think it's overly surprising, right? Clemson has kind of been building to this moment for months, working with their lawyers kind of in the shadows to get ready for this, and wrote about it this morning, and I know we're going to jump into it here, but there's no coincidence that ESPN and the College Football Playoff finalized that TV deal over the next 6 years yesterday, and Clemson filed that lawsuit on the same day.
So what does this mean then for the Super Conference era? Because I think everybody sees stuff happen in the ACC, and Florida State already sued the conference. Now Clemson's suing the conference. Now they're like, they're all suing each other. Does this like pull another Jenga block out of that tower for the Super Conference era to be a thing sooner rather than later?
The Jenga blocks have not fallen yet, but they're definitely wobbling. So what this lawsuit really does, right, is Clemson is challenging the ACC. They are asking the court to rule that Clemson does not owe any fiduciary responsibilities to the league, meaning that Clemson doesn't believe it needs to pay its exit fees, and the ACC doesn't control Clemson's broadcast rights after they leave the conference. What it also really simmers down to, right, JD, is Clemson and Florida State and these other schools in the ACC are operating at a major drawback, right? Because the Big Ten, the SEC are making so much more money off their own TV packages, but also with this new College Football Playoff revenue distribution structure, those two conferences are going to, each institution is going to make roughly $21 million. And then in the ACC, right, at Clemson and Florida State, they're going to be making roughly $13 million, right? I mean, so you add all the dollars up, and the schools in the SEC and the Big Ten are at a huge advantage. So if you're Clemson and Florida State, why wouldn't you try to get out and go earn those more dollars?
And something you and I talked about a lot on this show, Pete, is like, okay, we understand now. We've seen the conference realignment movie happen a few times to where these things happen in twos from conference to conference. I guess unless you're the ACC, then you have three schools leave. But bottom line, it's usually like you have a dancing partner to go with. Does this kind of provide the unspoken agreement? Like, hey, if Clemson or Florida State does leave, it'll be together kind of as a package deal of sorts?
You know, I think you bring up a good point. Clemson wrote in its filing yesterday that it basically supports Florida State, and the way that they displayed that was saying that they didn't sign off on the ACC suing Florida State, right? If you go back in time, the ACC actually started the legal battle of Florida State first, and it, before Florida State could actually sue the ACC. So that language there kind of signifies that, yeah, Clemson and Florida State are definitely operating on the same team. And you're right. It's much easier to topple a conference when you have two or three working with you opposed to just one.
Well, I'm watching this whole thing unfold, and like every single time something happens, I'm like, I got to ask Pete what this means. Like, does this mean we're going to get, you know, super conference? Does this mean that we're going to have, you know, Florida State and Clemson in the SEC or the Big Ten? What does this mean for, like, the imminence of that whole next chapter of, like, what college football is going to be? Does this mean that we have a resolution closer than we think? Or is it like, hey, this is still something we're just kicking the can down the road. This is the next chess move from Clemson.
So we're not kicking the can necessarily, JD. But the other thing you have to look at, too, is there's all these legal filings and courtroom battles. Like, this is not going to have a finale in 2 weeks, right? This is like a months long, maybe a years long battle brewing. But what we could have that could bring some finality to it closer is Florida State and Clemson look to negotiate and settle with the ACC on their exit fees and bringing that dollar figure down to maybe like the $250 to $272 million range. And if Florida State and Clemson choose to take that route, they could get out of the ACC a lot sooner. And then the ACC has to kind of move forward with the SMU, Cal, Stanford. Those three would be really important to the viability of the ACC. I think the other really important.
No, go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
No. The other really important thing, JD, here is like, what does it do to the college sports landscape? And I know that's kind of what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Do we get bigger super conferences? Does this trigger revenue sharing and an employment model a little bit sooner than people anticipated? Those are kind of the questions we have to think about now. And I think that we could see the next wave of realignment possibly happen if a North Carolina maybe jumps into this as well.
Interesting. So it might take like a one more straw to break the camel's back that is the ACC, we think?
I think so.
Interesting, because I'm a big Google guy. Like, I'm Googling, like, can Florida State leave the – can Clemson leave the ACC? And every single, like, search result I get is, can't tell 2036. And I see people writing, hey, it's ironclad, there's no way out of it. And then stuff like this happens, and I'm like, well, it seems like they feel strongly enough to where they at least have a puncher's chance to get out of that, like, that grant of rights deal. Is that accurate, or is it more so I'm trusting what Google says and, hey, they can't get out 2036?
Google isn't wrong, okay? But what Andy Staples and I were talking about yesterday is there is a reality where the ACC sees that they could lose in the courtroom. And losing in the courtroom would be much worse than maybe losing in Clemson and Florida State. And maybe that negotiation happens and they exit. That, you can make the argument, would be better for the sustainability of the ACC rather than the ACC just straight up losing in the courtroom. Because once the ACC loses in the courtroom, it really signals to the rest of the league that, hey, like, if Virginia Tech or Boston College or Miami wants to take us to court, now there's precedence that, hey, the ACC might lose.
Interesting. So then you get some blood in the water, the sharks start to frenzy, and then we just got a Pac-12 situation. Not the same thing necessarily, but, like, then there's – everybody can kind of jump ship at that point is what we're thinking?
Give or take, yeah. There's one other date too, JD, that you should be focusing on, and every college football fan should be. ESPN in next February 2025, will have the option to decline the last 9 years of its deal with the ACC. So if ESPN doesn't think that the ACC has the best television package, ESPN does have the option to walk out, and that would obviously topple the ACC as we know it.
Interesting. Man, so many moving pieces. Okay, so last question for you here. In your best estimation, because I know there's a lot of moving pieces and it might be different by the time we get off the air here in terms of your answer. If you had to take a guess, will this impact the way that the college football season is played in 2024. Will there be any breaking news that's going to impact this 2024 season, or it's more of a, hey, 2026, you know, 2027, whatever kind of thing?
So it's March 20th right now. I don't want to predict, but in this exact moment right now, I don't think these court filings will impact the 2024 ACC season playing out. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting here in October and there's some really breaking news about the future of the ACC coming together at that point.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. Again, totally reserving your right to change. We could have you back on tomorrow and you give us a different answer. But when it comes to before the season, do we get news before the season that, hey, kind of like the – I feel like it always happens around media days, or it happens in the summer where, like, things are quiet. Hey, Big Ten's adding USC, UCLA. Hey, Texas, Oklahoma's going to the SEC. Do we get something like that for the ACC? Again, totally guessing, hypothetical, educated guess with you being the most educated in the room to make that guess.
I'm not going to make that educated guess, but what I will say is the Florida State ACC lawsuit legal battle that's been brewing, right? There's a court date this week in North Carolina. That is like the first major date to see how this kind of comes together. And obviously it's a long march, but at the same time, if things start to not go right for the ACC in the courtroom and some of these preliminary hearings, does the ACC maybe signal a little bit more that they're open to negotiations? I'm not saying that will happen, but how these preliminary hearings go will really make a big impact on everything moving forward.
Golly, man. The plot thickens. Just a year-round ordeal, man, with college football. But I appreciate you jumping on, Pete, to make sense of it. I owe you, I'm sure, many gifts for you jumping on this show. So at some point in time, we'll have to settle up. But thanks for jumping on, brother, and making sense of this.
You bet. And, JD, one last thing.
Please.
The college football transfer portal opens in less than a month. Buckle up. Let's go.
Here we go, baby. Here we go. Hey, also follow Pete Nakos, man, the authority for all things transfer portal, all things college football all year round. Going to keep you dialed in, especially for portal season. Get locked in with those Nakos notifications. Pete, you're the man, brother. Appreciate you. That's the man, Pete Nakos. Again, just making sense of all things legal for us on this show. If something happens, whether it be conference realignment, whether it be someone suing somebody, we're fortunate enough to have Pete Nakos' phone number. We sent him a text, and he is always the man and jumps on the show. So we appreciate Pete. And again, I mentioned, hey, the transfer portal, it's going to open up after spring football, more or less. And there's going to be some big names that I think jump in there. Not because I know anything, just by nature of what it sounds like is happening. People that are dialed in, like, sounds like there's going to be some moving pieces when spring practice finishes up. If it's anything like that first cycle, there's going to be a high volume of players, if nothing else. But one of the biggest names that I think will show up in there in April, I don't think he can show up before then, but is going to show up in there at the latest in April. Caden Proctor shook the college football world yesterday by making it clear he is going to transfer, not just hit the portal from Iowa. He's going to go back to where he played football a season ago at Alabama. So let's give you kind of a rundown of this timeline of Caden Proctor and his recruitment, or his different recruitments, to kind of make the most sense of this whole situation. June of 2022, Caden Proctor's in high school in the state of Iowa. Five-star plus kind of player, number one tackle in the class of 2023, rather. Sorry, this is in June of 2022. He commits to Iowa. Hometown kid. He's staying home. He's going to be a Hawkeye. The whole state is juiced. December of 2022, before the class of 2023 signs, 2 days before National Signing Day, he flips to Bama. Hey, I'm going to go play for the GOAT. It's hard to argue with that. You want to talk about a place that's going to develop you to be your very best and play in the NFL, like, Bama makes a lot of sense. In the fall, Caden Proctor goes to Bama, starts as a true freshman. He's a freshman All-American. Like, what was it, a perfect year for Caden Proctor? No, but give him a break. He's a true freshman. I mean, freshman All-American honors and played in the SEC. I think that's a pretty solid first year out the chute. Then he hits the portal when Nick Saban announces he's retiring. Hits the portal and heads back to the hometown state, heads back to the team that he was originally committed to out of high school. Okay, so he commits January 20th to go back to Iowa and be a Hawkeye. Goes through winter workouts, goes through winter conditioning, and then yesterday announced that not only is he entering into the transfer portal, but Hayes Fawcett reports that he's going to go, he's going to go back to Alabama. So Caden Proctor, heading back to Tuscaloosa. This is massive news, absolutely insane in terms of the movement here across the board. to make sense of this right now, but first things first, make sure you subscribe to the On3 YouTube channel. College football every single day. Want y'all a part of it. We appreciate y'all being a part of it. Y'all are what make this a community. So thank you so much for being a part of it and being subscribed. So here's the way that I understand this whole thing to have gone. Some of this is still unclear as to why Alabama, but some of this I think you just say, hey, his heart and his relationships are still in Tuscaloosa. And whenever Nick Saban retires, the greatest of all time that brought you to Tuscaloosa, whenever your head coach retires, much less the head coach in the sport, like, yeah, there's some uncertainty there. And so when you have uncertainty, you want to, you know, provide some security for yourself. And so he commits back to the school and the staff that he knew. Then it sounds like he went on spring break with some teammates from Alabama and was back in Tuscaloosa for a period of time, it sounds like, whether it was just to get a workout in with some buddies or go back and get some things, see old friends, whatever, pretty harmless. Then announces he's committing to go back to Alabama. So again, from what I can gather, it sounds like whenever you make a decision to leave somewhere or go somewhere else, and Travis Ryer and the guys talked about this last night on the Bama Online YouTube channel, so go and check that out. It's a really good segment from them. They talk about 20 minutes on this exact topic. It's hard to know exactly how good you have it or what you feel about a place until you leave that place. So Caden Proctor, I mean, those are your dudes you go through the entire season with somebody. Like, you go through the entire season with one roster. There's some heartstrings that develop there. There's some relational capital that gets developed there. And so when he got to Iowa, you have to imagine maybe he missed Alabama a little bit. Maybe he missed some of those teammates. Maybe he wanted to get back to that familiarity in that locker room and the way they did things at Bama. And again, this is all from what I can gather, kind of assuming some things here. Have to imagine those teammates then communicated with him, hey, come back to Bama. This is the way that it's going to be. We're excited about the way things are headed. Vibes are positive. Tim Watts talked about it on their segment on the Bama Online YouTube channel. He said, like, Nick Saban, the way that he did things, very professional, very no-nonsense, very I am the law, this is how we're going to do things, lock in for it. Now at Alabama with Kalen DeBoer, it's, I hate to say this, but like maybe vibes are better, like in terms of just they're playing music at practice. Maybe it's a little bit more player-friendly, a little bit more relational. Not saying Nick Saban's way he did things was somehow incorrect. They got a whole lot of national championships to tell you it's not. But maybe if you're Caden Proctor and the way your teammates are talking about it, okay, I can go be in a environment that maybe is a little more player-friendly in some respects, and I can be with my teammates that I really do have a great relationship with and want to be a part of, and also be plugged right back in, you have to believe, and be a starter. Like, I think that had to be attractive. Again, this is all, from what I can gather, this is all assumption-based to a degree, but that's sort of the way this whole thing is looking to me by nature of Caden Proctor heading back to Alabama. Again, he is an immediate starter. They don't just give out freshman All-American badges for fun. Like, that is a serious honor that he got, and he's a 6'7", 360 kind of player. He's going to start at tackle for them. Make no mistake about it. Now, I think a lot of people saw this, and they say, well, you can't go back to an SEC school post-spring, right? Because that's the rule. You can't go from SEC school to SEC school from one spring practice to the next unless you are a graduate transfer. Now, Caden Proctor, the workaround for him is he went to an SEC school, yes, at Alabama last year. Then he went to a Big Ten school, was enrolled there, and then before spring practice is going to make the decision to not go to Iowa, not be at a Big Ten school, and then after spring practice, he'll be back at an SEC school. So that Big Ten gap there that he had with Iowa is why he can go back to an SEC school. People are going to say college football is broken. And I see where you're coming from. But I wouldn't say college football is broken. I would just say there's parts of it that we haven't yet figured out how to properly put together. Because the reality is, like, when do you know that you have an issue with your roof? Whenever it's leaking. Whenever there's a very obvious glaring problem and something has to be fixed. That's when you know that there's an issue with the roof. It doesn't mean the whole roof is just broken. You got to throw it out. It means there's an issue, has to be patched up. You got to find a solution, and you have to work with it. I think another way to say this is there's just a lot of new pieces in college football. NIL, less than a decade old. Transfer portal, same deal. It's very, very new, very, very fresh. And then you pair those things together and you remove the NCAA's oversight from NIL. Thank goodness. That's a new reality in college football. Also, the coaching changes. If a coach leaves, you have a 30-day window. If your head coach leaves, you have a 30-day window to jump in the portal. That's a new thing. We're still figuring out how to put this whole thing together. And just because we haven't figured out the perfect formula, the perfect fit for these pieces, doesn't mean these pieces are bad. Doesn't mean there shouldn't still be player mobility or NIL involved. Like, I don't think that's something we should just assume that college football is broken. It's a transition period. Things haven't reached their resting place yet. I don't believe in college football. But to say college football is broken, I don't know that I would agree with that. One more thought on this. A lot of people are going to say, well, it's NIL-based. Caden Proctor, hey, Bama just threw a bag at him, and that's why he's going back. I don't know the exact answer on the specifics of NIL at Iowa or at Bama, but I'm just going to say, again, from my assessment, I don't think that is exactly the reason why he's headed back to Bama. I think it's relational, and I think it's the fact that he wants to be back with his teammates and be somewhere he's familiar, and I think that's kind of the deal that got him back to Alabama. Now, also, I'd be remiss if we didn't at least mention this a little bit. This morning, I go on the Twitter sphere, and I see a tweet from the Ohio State, I don't know if collective is the right word, but an Ohio State, yeah, I guess collective is the word, the foundation. And they tweet out, our student athlete partner, Caleb Downs, is locked in and ready for a big year. Go Bucks, thefoundationohio.com. Because overnight, there started to become this message board momentum and rumors that Caleb Downs, hey, Caden Proctor's going back to Bama. Maybe Caleb Downs is going to jump back in there and head back to Tuscaloosa. That's not happening. And whether the foundation was answering the trolls on social media with that tweet or not, I don't know, but I thought it was just hilarious. That's the world we're living in. Caleb Downs was trending on Twitter under sports. So, hate to, you know, hey, just take a win if you're an Alabama fan. You got Caden Proctor coming back. If you're an Alabama fan, Caleb Downs, I hate to break it to you, I don't think he's leaving Columbus anytime soon. I'm pretty sure he is set to do some big things in Columbus, much like that tweet implies. Last thing here, I think this is going to promote some change in college football. I think we're going to see this be a landmark moment in the sport where Caden Proctor transferring to a school and then transferring away from that school back to where he played the year before after spring practice. I think we're going to see that be a thing where I don't know if it changes the portal. I don't know if it changes spring practice. I don't know what that looks like, but I do know that there is some things in the works right now. So where if you're a coach in spring practice, you can kind of protect yourself from a competitive advantage that you can lose by having players transfer during spring ball and all things like that. So much like we saw Tennessee kind of change the way we're attacking NIL in the future, I think we could see this Caden Proctor situation change the way that spring ball looks or change the way that the transfer portal looks. And not just Caden Proctor, but it could kind of be that moment we point to and say, hey, something's gotta change with how I put these pieces together. So good for Caden Proctor, going somewhere that he's excited to be. Good for Alabama, getting a All-American, freshman All-American kind of tackle for him. It's going to be a force on that offensive line. The show goes on. Hey, appreciate y'all that are tuned in live. If you're watching via YouTube, go ahead and like the video. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. Got a few more things to get to here. Also, quick plug, if you got your bracket situated and you're doing your bracket through ESPN, I've linked in this video, in this live show rather, the link to our Hard Count Community Bracket Challenge. If you win that, you get a free program t-shirt. We're not selling these. There's nowhere else we're giving these out. If you win the bracket, though, you get a t-shirt. Pretty good deal. All right, before we got on the air here, Nebraska made some noise. Troy Dannon is set to be the new athletic director out there in Lincoln. He was hired at Washington in October of 2023 to be their athletic director. Hired Jed Fish. Previously, he was at Tulane for the better part of last several years, I mean 2015 to 2023. Couple of key pieces to look at here with this. Because if you're a college football fan in Lincoln, Nebraska, rooting for the Huskers, you're kind of like, okay, what's the angle here for us from a football perspective? I don't know that it's going to be tremendously impactful for the 2024 season, but just from a broad scope, I think it's worth unpacking a little bit. When he was at Tulane, they had a lot of success on the field. I mean, three consecutive bowl appearances for the Green Wave. They were conference champions in the American Athletic Conference. They had a New Year's Six Bowl win over USC. Like, they did some positive things. But if I'm a Nebraska fan, there's two things that I really like with this hire of Troy Dannon in terms of what he's going to bring to Lincoln. The first is he's been on some really high-level committees. He was a chair of the NCAA Football Competition Committee, and then he was an executive committee member of Football Oversight. So, do those positions hold a lot of weight with him being the AD now at Nebraska? Who's to say? But the thing that tells me is he understands the the future of college football. He's been in some rooms and talked to some people now that have talked about the way this thing is trending going forward. And so he's not in the dark about anything when it comes to where college football is going to be in 5-10 years. Like, he's on the cutting edge of that, which I think is a positive by nature of Nebraska being where they are right now and, you know, the stance they are right now in the Big Ten Conference being in a good spot. The other part of this that I really enjoy, if I'm a Nebraska fan, Matt Rhule, when he addressed Trev Albert's departure via a press conference the other day, he said the next AD at Nebraska has got to be a doer. That's one of the things he loved about Trev Alberts. He was proactive. He was a go-getter. He was not a guy that's going to say, okay, we'll kind of see how this landscape shifts and then we'll react. He's not reactive. He's proactive. And Troy Dannon, I think, fits that mold, led multiple fundraising projects at Tulane and was successful in doing that. It's going to be paramount at Nebraska. Tremendous buy-in, tremendous fan base, rabid fan base. Like, there is a lot to tap into there. And so if Troy Dannon can tap into that effectively and be proactive in tapping into that effectively, that's going to be a tremendous course setter for Nebraska football over the course of the next couple of seasons. Again, this is a massive title. It's a massive hire. But if you're a Nebraska fan, success of your football program goes back to Matt Rhule and everyone in that locker room and on that roster. Troy Dannon, as good of a hire as this is, in my opinion, he's not catching passes. He's not throwing touchdowns. He's not calling plays. He's helping oversee the athletics department. He is overseeing the athletics department. That's what he's doing. So unless there's an issue, it's not going to have a tremendous impact on Matt Rhule in the day-to-day. But, again, I think Matt Rhule and Nebraska football, the arrow is pointing up. But good for Nebraska going out and getting their AD. And I think Troy Dannon was a really solid hire. I don't pretend to be an expert in athletic directors, but I think Troy Dannon's a solid hire for what he brings to the table and for the way that Nebraska football is trending into the future. All right, now, I put out a question on my Twitter page yesterday, at JD Pakel, so make sure to follow me there. I asked, who's the most rabid fan base in all of college football? Now, rabid's a key word there, because some people hear rabid and they say, oh, well, we're the biggest fan base, or oh, we're the loudest fan base. Rabid is like you wouldn't want to get in a cage with them and have to fight them. Like, they are intense, they are passionate, they're energetic, they're engaged, and it's not dictated on if they're winning or losing. It's like they're just rabid to the core. That's who they are. That's who that fan base is. So I want to also note this. This is not an all-encompassing list, right? This, if we're not mentioning your school, doesn't mean that we don't think y'all are still rabid to the core. It's just kind of the top tier for us in terms of our experience and also just the schools that have a reputation that precedes themselves. And a school that we just talked about a moment ago and I think is probably the most pure form of rabid is the Nebraska Cornhuskers, man. Nebraska, their fan base, they're active on everything. YouTube, socials, real life, in person. Like, they've got a sellout streak of 396 games, and you hear everybody. I can hear it already in the comment section right now. That's a fake sellout. You got boosters or whoever forking over money to keep that sellout streak alive of 396 games. Okay? So, you say it's fake? That's fine. You're still having people with deep pockets that care enough about this sellout streak to make it a reality and keep it intact. And it's easy to be rabid when you win. It's easy to be rabid when you're bringing home Big Ten championships. Nebraska's fighting to make a bowl game. This is a fan base that is starving for a bowl game. And still, that sellout streak is intact. Still, y'all get after it in the comment section. Get after it on the YouTube channel. So Nebraska is a fan base that we are very fortunate to be familiar with and a fan base that is rabid to the core, I believe, in the most pure sense of what a rabid fan base is. Another rabid fan base for you that I think has to be at the top of every single list when you unpack rabid fan bases in college football, Texas A&M. And Texas A&M to me is rabid, but they're rabid in like a very tribal sense of the word. Like, you need a full week to go to College Station and to learn every single tradition and custom and quirk that makes Texas A&M what it is. Like, the Aggie ring in itself, man. Every single school, to my knowledge, gives out a class ring or gives you the opportunity to buy a class ring. I don't know a Texas A&M alum that doesn't own their class ring and wear it every single day. Also, my sister recently got married to a Texas A&M alum, Colton, my guy, appreciate you. They do the war hymn at every single wedding. Like, it is not a joke of like, oh, are we going to do the war hymn? It's like, war hymn is on, we're ending the wedding, and everybody that went to A&M that's in that building is full-fledged, full-heart in it, full-throat, just belting out the war hymn. Varsity, like, all, the whole deal, okay? It's not like a half-hearted, let's kind of do our fight song. They're all in, okay? That is an experience. The Midnight Yell, people make fun of it on Twitter. That's fine. Make fun of it if you want to. Make fun of it if you want to, but that's a fan base that I think is just all the way bought in to do everything that comes with that Midnight Yell, that comes with the Yell leaders. Like, I respect it, man. I respect it. College football in itself is very unique. Texas A&M is like in that 1% tile of what makes college football unique to the nth degree, and I say that in the most positive way possible. Last part of this that makes Texas A&M rabid as can be, this is a fan base now that has one central message board. One message board, okay? It's Texags, and they're independent, and Billy Lucci is running that empire, and like that is where you go for Texas A&M content. Many have tried to make a message board to compete with it. It's just impossible. Texags is its own entity, and it is a giant in our industry, and it's independent. So A&M, man, Texags, Texas A&M, rabid. And I got to work there for a very short period of time, there being in College Station doing local news. It is all A&M all the time in College Station and Bryan. LSU is also rabid, man. And LSU is kind of the stuff of legend in some ways. Like Louisiana, Baton Rouge kind of feels like its own country when you hear people talk about it. It's its own culture. It's its own culinary, the tailgating experience. Again, we haven't experienced it in person. We'd love to here in the near future, but it's the thing where it starts on Wednesday, sometimes Thursday for a Saturday game. They are all about that life. And this is also worth noting. This is the team in the state. Like, I love Louisiana Tech. I love Southeastern Louisiana. But like, LSU is that school in the state. I think there's some absurd percentage of high schools that wear purple and gold and have the tiger as their mascot. Like, LSU, rabid as it gets. Also, I'll say this too, they will get after you on social media. They will get after you. I think we've been fortunate to dodge a few bullets on the LSU front for the most part, but we did a video on Jaden Daniels and about how I think he should be the second quarterback taken, second player taken in the NFL draft. And in that, or maybe it wasn't even that, maybe it was a recruiting video. The bottom line is I was talking about something that had nothing to do with Malik Nabers. I mentioned him as a footnote to the point I was making. And I think what I said was, yeah, Malik Nabers is probably a first-round pick or something to that degree. That was essentially what I said. The thing that I did wrong was I left some margin to allow for Malik Nabers not being a first-round pick by nature of my sentence. Now, I went and took that video to the Ponderosa, and that's the On3 message board for our LSU site, the Bengal Tiger. Get locked in over there. And I'll tell you what, man, it didn't matter all the good things I said about LSU. It didn't matter what I said about how Brian Kelly was crushing it on the recruiting trail. They got after me for saying Malik Nabers. Not just basically what I said wrong was I didn't say definitively Malik Nabers is a first-round pick. So now it's kind of an inside joke whenever I go back to that message board, and the good folks on that message board are very, very welcoming. But I now open every single thing I post on that message board with Malik Nabers is a first-round pick. Here's the video. Malik Nabers is a first-round pick. Here's what I think about this. So LSU, man, they are intense as it gets. Last one to get to here that we're going to really riff on is Tennessee. Tennessee, man, they are as passionate as any other fan base. And that sounds like a pretty cliche statement to say, but if you don't believe me, they beat Alabama, took down the goalposts, right? Most places will take down the goalposts if it's a big win, if it's an intense fan base, especially an SEC school. Tennessee then proceeded to take those goalposts out of the stadium and throw them into a river. Do you know how outside of your mind you have to be to storm the field, take a goalpost, and then put it in a body of water? Tennessee is second to none. The Vol Navy, second to none. They are intense, man. We've experienced it firsthand by nature of being able to go to Tennessee. That fan base, when it was the blackout game against South Carolina, there was not an empty seat in there. That stadium is also like enormously tall. It's all on top of you. Like, Tennessee, man, as passionate, as rabid as any fan base in America, without question, one of the most rabid fan bases in college football. A couple other to include, Ohio State. I believe they're the largest fan base in college football is the unofficial title for them. rabid, no way around it. Alabama, massive passion. I think they're going to get a chance now to kind of strut their stuff a little bit more because they no longer have the Nick Saban shield in front of them. People kind of shortchange their passion because you're winning a lot of national titles. Who are you when you go 9-3? That's the real question here. Florida State, man, after that college football playoff fallout, they got after some folks, man. They were on offense in a very real way on social media, and it's hard to call them a school that wouldn't be in this rabid category. Last one, Georgia. They bark at human beings. They pretend to be dogs in normal public settings. And I think that's what's beautiful about college football. So there you have it. Trey Yannity on the ones and twos, man. That's that guy running the show for us here, getting Pete Nakos on, punching the show live. I mean, just best in the business, man, making it all happen. Trey, we talked about this a little bit before we got out the door yesterday, man. Rabid fan bases, there's a lot to get to. Who makes the short list for you? Any we missed? Any you want to add to there? You got to experience a lot of these fan bases this past season. Who's rabid in your mind, Trey, in college football?
I think you hit it on the nose, JD. I mean, it takes the right timing, too. I think that's a big thing, right? You're going to find maybe the most passionate Alabama fan was in 2008 or 2009 when they're on their climb. You know, you're going to find more passion when you're chasing something, you know, when you are climbing towards success. So, you know, maybe for Alabama in 2016 and 17, it wasn't quite as passionate as it was before. But then there's that tier of fan bases that, well, they kind of exceed all of that. Doesn't matter what they're doing, if they're winning, if they're losing, if they've won 10 titles in a row. And I think in that tier, you hit the three: Tennessee, LSU, Nebraska. And we posed a poll question here to our viewers on YouTube.
Nice.
88 votes in. And the options I gave them, LSU, Tennessee, Nebraska, and other, right now other, is it 51%?
As
you would imagine, you know, there's fans all over the country that, I see some Notre Dame in the comments, seen a lot of Florida State, so the other makes sense. But LSU, out of those three, pulling in 30% on our poll, I think that's a fair mark.
Trey, I'm going to throw one at you here. You throw it right back and tell me what you think. Oregon, West Coast, they kind of have that Pac-12 label, you know, they're that flashy school that, you know, in a lot of people's mind. Oregon, I think, is they're nuts, dude. Like, I love my Ducks is a real thing.
I like that take a lot. And if there's one school, you know, west of the, I guess that southwestern line, Texas, you know, once you really get out west, Oregon dominates, I think, all of the West Coast schools by a lot. And they're one of those schools, you know, they split their state. They have another huge Power 5 school in the state. So, you know, like an LSU, like a Tennessee, really unlike them, they don't get to dominate their state with the fan base, but the passion's there, you know, the colors, the uniforms. It's a fan base that is distinct when you see them out and about, but a fan base that certainly is passionate. And you know what, I think that's maybe part of the reason a guy like Dan Lanning says, hey, I'm not going to go to Tuscaloosa, I'm going to stay here, because these people care about it a little bit more.
I'm dialed in. They got that Nike money. Also, not in a major city, too. Or not, I say major city, like you compare it to the other Pac-12 major schools, yeah. Like USC, UCLA, they're in Los Angeles. Washington's more or less in Seattle. Eugene's kind of its own island out there where, like, it's not in Portland. It's kind of in the countryside. Like, it's sort of its own isolated thing where it's like you are all about the Ducks. Similar to A&M. Like, if you're in Bryan College Station, you're in Brazos County, like, you're all about your Ags, man.
Brazos County. You know? I love the reference there. We had, I'm forgetting the town in California yesterday.
Fallbrook,
California. Brazos County.
Avocado capital of the world, I think. It used to be. I don't know if it still is.
I saw a comment yesterday, too. Somebody saying New Mexico takes the cake with the avocado, but.
Ooh. Any you would add to this list? Anywhere you're like, hey, man, like, Clemson, I know they're kind of that same deal where they meet at the Paw, and that's its own kind of unique tradition.
You know,
Auburn's rabid too.
I was
going
to say
that
tier of team is maybe the tier right below it. Even Florida State maybe makes that list.
For sure.
Huge fan base, kind of like Ohio State, maybe not quite as rabid on the surface, but huge. And they care, and they really care when it counts. You know, I'd like to pick a school from Florida and a school from Texas, and I think Texas A&M has got to be our candidate there. And,
sure.
And, you know, maybe a school like Florida State from the Sunshine State as well. There's schools that maybe don't have the football fan base. A school like Kansas has a rabid fan base.
Yeah.
Doesn't carry over to the gridiron quite as much. But, I think you hit them all on the nose there.
Kentucky?
Dude,
KSR, like, they are. I don't think I had a proper calibration for, like, how massive that brand was till I got to On3. Like, dude, they're rock stars.
They are.
They're rock stars.
They're rock stars.
That site is a rock star site.
Oh yeah, no doubt. That's a site that you know, people clamor to for a reason, and that's the fan base. We had our guy Stephen Peake, part of KSR's army, over there in our office last week, and he made a good point. You know, it's interesting that Kentucky basketball, if you're at a Kentucky basketball game, doesn't really have the same energy that a Kentucky football game does. Maybe that's some of that chase we're talking about, though. They're still climbing the mountain in football, and they've already gotten to the peak in basketball, yeah. So you can't carry that energy week to week.
They're getting it. They're getting it there. You had a great question yesterday, too, as we were putting the segment together, and we're kind of just bouncing ideas off each other. They play football at the FCS level, too, and they got some rabid fan bases over there. Not to spend too much time here, but kind of like your sleeper. Like, yeah. Hey, don't forget about this school. You got any you wanna hit on?
Well, it's like game day. You know, we're gonna hit on all the Power Fives. We're gonna take care of all the big dogs, of course. It's not to say the FCS schools aren't that, but you know, game day goes to an FCS site every year, so we got to pick our FCS school too. I'm gonna say Appalachian State, if that still counts.
As previously far as, FCS, no longer, but like I hear what you're saying, FCS.
That's just mid-major.
FCS
even,
category, yeah.
And if we're going to, you know, stay out of the FCS and just stay mid-major, too, we got to shout out a guy, Nick Brick, who I'm filling in for at the moment, Western Kentucky. Those people care there. A lot of the MAC schools, I think, deserve it not, but I'm going to go Appalachian State as my mid-major FCS.
Sleeper, yeah.
There. What do you got, Jaden?
That other tier. No, I'm with you. I think in answering that, tell you what, in the fall, man, it gets cold. Very, very cold some places, colder than others. The state of Montana. Montana and Montana State make up two of the top three in terms of average attendance in FCS. Like, again, going back to the whole game day lens, seeing when game day went to, I think it was Montana State for the Brawl of the Wild, like, those folks are about that life in Montana, Montana. Also, good football. Good football being played out there. A lot of guys go to the league from Montana, Montana State. Those two, I think, are, they love their ball. Love their ball out there. No pro team in Montana, right? I mean,
that helps too. That's a key.
That's the deal. Yeah, that's the deal.
It's like North Dakota. If you want to throw them in there, no pro. That's their pro team, even at the FCS level. And I apologize for no camera again today. You know, we ask that you don't look behind the curtain. So we'll just keep it like this for today.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, hey, Trey, we got. Excuse me. I'm coughing up a lung over here. We got madness in March. We got anything in the live chat from the folks? I know you and I were just riffing on a while with the rabid fan bases. Anything added from the chat? Anything anyone else is asking or saying over there?
Yeah, we got a few Ask JDs. People were awesome today, as always, but they're getting them early for us. Let's start with Ferris Khan. Hashtag Ask JD. Are we close to seeing 2 or 4 year contracts for college football players so teams can essentially lock in players and not have to re-recruit them due to portal transfers?
I think we are nearing that. I think we are going to enter into more and more of an era where the first thing we see is like protection from, hey, if you do transfer, you protect us from having to spend more money. Like, okay, then this money is void or this contract is void or whatever. Like, we don't owe you any more money. So I think you'll see more and more protection for the powers that be when it comes to NIL and things like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was the next phase of this thing, man. Like, hey, you're locked in for 3 years. If you want to get out of this thing, then you have to buy yourself out. Like, people really casually throw out the take that, like, oh, hey, if you're a head coach and you leave, why can't the kids leave then too as freely as some of these coaches do? The coaches also have contracts that get bought out. So I think buyouts for kids could be the next thing on the NIL front, right? You know,
that's such a wild time that we were living in here, JD. But
it's nuts, bro. Could you imagine 10 years ago having this conversation?
Oh my goodness.
10 years ago.
Even, shoot, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. It's that's the Wild West. That's wild what we West. Have. I saw an awesome question about relegation. I'm struggling to find it here. We had so many amazing comments today. I'll kind of summarize it with there now essentially being two power conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC. Are we ever going to see somewhat of a relegation model so other teams can get in on that TV money, get in on what we could call, I guess, the highest level of college football?
Yeah, see, I don't think so, just because relegation makes sense to a degree at a professional level, but at the collegiate level, like, it just hamstrings you so much when it comes to getting back to that level. Like, it's harder to recruit. It's harder to raise money, I would have to imagine. Like, I think that the college football tectonic plates are shifting enough as is to where if we did relegation, man, that to me would just be a bit too much. Be a bit too much in my for my taste, you know?
Yeah.
Also, the schedules are set so far in advance. Like, how do you then tinker with that? You know, it's just It'd be a lot.
Really fun idea on paper. I mean, it's, you know, it'd be exciting if you're maybe a mid-tier school and you have the chance, or, you know, even shoot, former Power 5 schools at this point, maybe you have the chance to get in, but I'm with you. It's a lot. And, you know, for kids, too, that's, you sign a letter of intent, you get to school, all of a sudden you get relegated, and then, you know, your college
career. I'm transferring out.
Yeah, and then we're talking about buyouts and whatever else. How about a couple more, JD?
I love it, man. Let's do it. What do you think, two more?
Let's do two more, and I see some more Big Ten love in here today. This question kind of about scheme, but some good Big Ten ties. Michigan ran the ball about 61% of the time last year. Mm-hmm. Ohio State was closer to 50-50. Which style do you think is going to be the most successful in 2024?
Which style is going to be the most successful in
2024? Let's say for the Big Ten, since we got two.
Yeah, for the Big Ten. You know, I think we're shifting into an era with these new teams and new conferences where – you have to be able to do both effectively. That's not to sit on the fence here. I think if you can just impose your will, go two tight ends, have a Joe Moore Award level offensive line, which Michigan did, even though they didn't win the Joe Moore last year, they still had a Joe Moore award-winning offensive line finalist up there. I would think that'd be the way that you would like to go. Most simplistic style of ball, you're able to have that most crucial matchup, which is the trenches up front. If you can be most effective at one of those, whether it's passing or throwing the football, I would lean on like that ground and pound. But with that being said, Michigan was successful because they also had a quarterback who's going to go in the first round in J.J. McCarthy. Like they had some counter punches to what they did effectively running the football. So I don't think it's a either or. I think it's a yes and to be successful. But I really do think it starts up front. Like, football is a big person's game, and that's the way it is still. And I think that's the way that it's going to be for the foreseeable future going forward.
We're evolving, but and it's not sitting on the fence. You look at a school like Ole Miss, they throw the ball a ton.
For sure.
Look at the stats. They also run it a ton. So I think a balance is certainly fair there, JD.
Got to have both.
Let's get one more, and we got OG Gary asking about maybe some more hypotheticals. We'll get back to that tomorrow, and appreciate you sticking with us throughout the show, OG Gary. But we got a question about Nebraska here. Had to get to it. Talking about their rabid fan base today. Jonathan Rayfield, I'm sure, is part of it. Hashtag Ask JD. How long do you think it'll take for Nebraska to win the Big Ten title? Will Matt Rhule, or Matt Rhule will get there, is what he's saying. But the question is when.
It's a great question. It's a really great question. If we're gonna trust the trend of Matt Rhule's success, year three is typically that year where they pop and play for a conference title. Did it at Baylor in year three. They played for it, didn't win it. I think it was year three at Temple where they won their conference. I think for Nebraska, let's wait till year four. So year four, Dylan Raiola is then going into his third season, I believe, if that's correct. Yeah, he'd be going into his third year. He's matured. The roster around him has matured. I think the big thing is having a roster at a talent level that is – within striking distance of an Ohio State, of a Michigan, of a Penn State, of an Oregon. And I don't think Nebraska's there yet, but I think they're building towards that. Because the common misconception is, well, you got to have the best roster to win the conference. I think it helps. I think it puts you at the best position to start the year, but it's football, man. Things happen. There's depth issues. There's things across the board that impact your roster talent level. So can Nebraska just be in that same arena, and then can they make up for it with gameplay and schematics and having depth, like all those things, I think probably combine to make a conference title winning team. So a lot of factors, a lot of variables, but go ahead and put me down for year four to be the year where we start to talk about that a little bit more freely if they're able to have success that trends that way. I'm not calling my shot, but that's the year I would watch for it.
I love it.
How's that sound?
All right, how about we get it this year, huh? Let's just get Matt Rhule that title right away so we can just get it out of the way.
Dude, brutal conference. Such a brutal conference. Tough. Golly, that's another thing, man. Tough conference.
Schedules are important, but a rabid fan base, that's really all you need to get you to the finish line there.
The wind beneath your wings.
And I want to leave the poll open until we got done with our Join the Party segment here. We saw a spike. 144 votes is where we're going to cap it off. 53% goes to the other. But LSU, out of those three, between Tennessee, Nebraska, and Louisiana State, they take the cake at 26% on our poll here. Quite the rabid fan base, JD.
I think that's right. They're one of those fan bases, Trey, that like you and I haven't gone and been able to interact with in person, but they just have such a reputation that precedes themselves. Like Death Valley at night is what you hear about from every single college football fan when you ask them, like, hey, what's the best environment you've been in? If they've been to Death Valley at night in Baton Rouge, especially for Alabama, they're like, no question. It's that and everything else. So Hopefully we get to experience it here sooner rather than later, brother. Hopefully so. But again, Trey Yannity making everything that you see here happen on the ones and twos, punching the show, getting Pete Nakos on the show. I mean, it's just Swiss Army knife making it happen. And we appreciate y'all making it happen. Appreciate y'all being a part of this college football community. Get your brackets in. I linked it into the show here on the YouTube channel. We'll also make sure we link it in the podcast for you. But we're glad to have y'all a part of this, man. This is what makes it special. I'll say it again. Year-round sport is college football. Subscribe so you don't miss a minute of what we're talking about right here on this show, The Hard Count, which is, of course, college football year-round. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. We're grateful for y'all. We're going to keep this party rolling, and we will see y'all next time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.